Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Rizzo. Nobody at first. Incredible. Atrocious defense from the Yankees, leading directly to a Dodger run in the fifth. Cracked in the air to deep center field. Judge retreats. He'll make the grab, but the Dodgers have come all the way back and taken the lead in game five. Start the party, Los Angeles. Your Dodgers have won the World Series.
Last night was a something. I enjoyed that. I was very lucky because my flight to Phoenix was exactly long enough for me to watch the majority of the game. Starting, I think we got going in the third inning, and I was able to watch all of the excitement inside of Yankee Stadium, and then it turned to horror in the fifth inning when they had this nightmare. And then this incredible comeback by Gerrit Cole to go back out there after that, and the focus that he showed, not going crazy on his teammates when they may have cost them, and they did cost them the World Series. The whole thing was an amazing watch from start to finish.
I totally agree. Had the wife out of town, so it was solo last night. Had a cigar on the balcony listening to Boog on the radio call. But had the TV on and had it all timed out and everything. And then just like watching that whole thing. And Gerrit Cole fell asleep on a spring training play.
He sure did. And PFPs, baby.
You got to go over, man. You got to go over. Even if you think that's the first baseman's ball. And it might have been Anthony Rizzo's ball. But both of those guys were like, ah, they exhaled, man. Because there had already been two mistakes. And then you just knew more runs were coming. You knew they were coming at that point. And they all came. Five unearned runs. And the fourth time ever in World Series history. And Gerrit Cole has allowed it. First time since a guy named Clem Labine, Bruce Levine's uncle, I think it was, in 1960 in the World Series. But man, Yankees don't play clean, dude. They don't play clean. And they sacrifice defense for offense. And they survived it all year. But in the end, the Dodgers big money guys are better fundamentally than the Yankees big money guys. And everywhere else that they can, they make sure they've got fundamentally sound dudes. And it mattered.
It was so funny, too. Like on the Mookie play that Cole doesn't cover the bag.
Yeah.
You almost saw it. Like you almost saw like the click-on effect happen with the Dodgers, where they were like, oh, here's our opportunity. And now we're going to run right through this opportunity that the Yankees have given us.
Shout out to Tyler Kepner, the New York Times, who tweeted, little roller up along first, because that's Mookie in New York in the World Series. He's channeling Vin Scully there, but it did not get behind the bag and it did not get through Buckner. But still, yeah, you saw that coming. And it's just interesting, man. Like, you got to play clean. And you got to spend money on sluggers who also are good players. Yeah, ideally, that's what you want to do.
Like, Aaron Judge is a good player.
Not in center field, though, man.
And he did make the spectacular catch
earlier
in the game.
Yes, he did.
But the one hit right at him.
Dude, all year long, I was like, man, I can't believe they're going to get away with Judge in center all year. And he's a great player and a really good, you know, a really good five-tool dude, but he's not a World Series caliber center fielder. He's just not. But they made that choice, and it came back to bite them.
I loved some of the other choices, like some of the managerial choices. And I got to say that this crossed my mind as the Dodgers were trying to come back. Once we got to, I think it was the eighth inning, I was sitting there going, "Do you pinch hit for Ohtani?" Like, that was going through my mind because he's barely hanging on.
Yeah.
Like, he's holding on to his shoulder as he's running down the bases. And, would that be sacrilege to do that in that moment, knowing that you want to try and pile on and get another run?
Yes. Yes, it would be sacrilege. You can't pitch it for Ohtani. You can't. But it's
can't
like,
I, though?
No, I don't know. It was amazing that nobody in the baseball universe really knew how Dave Roberts was going to get through that game. And then he eventually does, like, my favorite thing, one of my favorite things in sports, man, when everybody knows it's the eighth, ninth inning of a World Series game, absolutely anybody on the staff.
Johnny Allstaff.
Oh, I love Johnny Allstaff. There's just something, so cool about it, whether it's big money John Lester being ready in the seventh game in 2016, or whether it's two-time Tommy John Walker Buehler being ready on his side day.
That's crazy.
Right. And then and after the game saying, I got excited thinking about it. I just wanted to see if I was tough enough to do it. Because he grew up watching great starting pitchers do that for their teams in the World Series. It's such a beautiful team ethos that starting pitchers get a chance to live, and they don't often get a chance to live it. You know?
What I love about that with Buehler too is there is a freedom in it. There's a freedom in I'm not going to pitch again. Like if I do this, I'm not going to pitch again the rest of this series, and hopefully I don't have to. And I wonder if his mind went to that place of, I am going to give everything that I have. I am warm enough to give you 20 pitches to get out of this thing and for us to win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a joy and a freedom to the idea of there for me, this is going to be it. So why not make it epic?
Yeah. You know, it's cool. And he's a free agent. And so he might be done. Like is that his last gasp of Dodger life is to be the dude who gets the final out is pretty amazing. Cause the offseason is here, man. Like the way Juan Soto answered that question last night about, do the Yankees have the inside track? And he said, basically said no. Like, whoever's going to offer me the most money, that'll be interesting. And whether that's Boris speaking through Soto to try to get the market as wide as it is, it's fascinating because you got all those different teams dreaming of Soto right now.
It's going to be payback time for Scott Boris.
I think it's probably true. Here's Juan Soto when asked, and Cub fans can listen in, if he's going to be a Yankee or go somewhere else.
I don't know what's the teams that want to come after me, but definitely, I'll be open to this and every single team. I don't have any doors closed or anything like that. So, we're going to be available for all 30 teams.
So, all 30 teams. It feels like Boris speak of like, come on, man, let's dredge it up. Let's take this opportunity.
Sounds to me like Juan Soto to the White Sox. That's what it sounds like to me.
We're not going
to
be getting in the Juan Soto stakes, I tell you that.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, you got to go. You got a new manager. Why not give him some help? I bet Juan Soto, if like he got an offer, he'd be like, wait, who are the White Sox?
Oh, man. Wait, that's the team that just let Moncada go? Is that right?
Are they in the majors or no?
Oh, God. Who is William Venable? Tell me about that.
He probably knows Will Venable, but
I mean, everybody knows Will Venable, I suppose.
From the Zoom today, it seems like everyone knows Will.
I don't think Juan Soto knows Will Venable. Venable was a coach for the Cubs, the Red Sox, and the Rangers, sure. But why does Juan Soto care who the coaches are for the other team?
That's a good point. But maybe he does, and that'll get him on the south side.
We got a trade today, too. Jorge Soler traded from the Braves to the Angels.
How about the fact that business just started?
Yeah,
let's go.
Let's go. Been holding this one in the hopper. Let's go ahead and do it, man. So
let me go back to the game from last night.
Please.
Walker Buehler's effort was amazing. So was Blake Treinen's. Like, what that guy did last night for them, and you're sitting there going, how much farther could he go inside of this game? I thought, I'm not really a big Dave Roberts as manager guy. I thought he managed a great game last night.
He had a great year in that regard. We just talked about it with your guy, Steven Nelson, the other day. And Roberts had all of a sudden, it was another bullpen game, essentially, last night, because Flaherty, Jack Flaherty, wasn't good. But, like, asking Trinan to go 2 1/3 when the final three outs of that are getting through Soto and Judge and Chisholm and Stanton is amazing. So when he did that, I think Trinan, you know, made himself some money.
So rings for Kopech, rings for Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
Ring for Mark Pryor.
Yes.
As the Dodgers pitching coach.
Uh-huh.
I'm happy for Kopech.
Yeah, Michael Kopech got a ring, and his father tweeted this morning pictures of Kopech and his dad and Kopech and his mom on the field. And God, we've known so much of that dude's baseball life.
Yep.
And so much of his relationship with his dad, which was like, you know, his dad, you know, built the mound for him to throw off of. You know, behind the barn down there in Texas. His dad quit being a lawyer so he could be essentially the CEO of Michael Kopech Incorporated when dude was in high school. You know, it's like
the juxtaposition of where he was in August to where he is now, to go from the worst team in baseball to winning the World Series in 2 months. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's that's heady stuff. And it's interesting because I tweeted out today somebody had put out the entire list of the Dodgers analytics team. And remember, I had the scoop. Shane, you remember when I had the scoop? You were such a big fan of it.
Scoop, yeah. Spiegel.
Yeah, yeah. On the analytics team, which they're now calling the R&D team over at the White Sox. The Dodgers analytics team, it takes 4 screenshots to tweet every person in that analytics department. It's the biggest analytics department in baseball, and the White Sox have 8, and maybe they'll get up to 10.
And the Dodgers just won the big baseball game, right?
Big one.
All right, so maybe the White Sox and other teams should follow that path.
That's part of it. They should also all have infinite money that they can put into the future.
Yeah, they're about to get $300 million, I think, extra from their RSN deal. I think they're getting another $300 million soon.
And
Shane, why are you treating the World Series like it's us talking about the Super Bowl?
I'm not.
The big game.
No, I'm not. I'm just emphasizing that this is the big baseball game, and the teams in it are probably doing something right. You should do what they do. But Lawrence, you brought up all these former Cubs and White Sox that are getting rings, and we're so happy for them, but you failed to mention Daniel Hudson. Hudson,
right.
Also gets his ring.
Yeah.
Finally.
Daniel
He's
Hudson.
He's 66.
He retired.
He is 66 years old.
He retired this morning. He said, I can't make it through another 162. I can't do that.
Like, were we talking about Daniel Hudson in like 2008?
I think he was a White Sox like in 2007, 2008, 2009.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You hang around and you do your job and you end up with a World Series ring.
2009 was his debut. He was there 2009, 2010.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Shane, you didn't, you're not alone, by the way. I talked to one of my baseball sages, Barry Rosner. He was watching hockey last night. I'll go ahead and out him. I had to text him and like try to get him interested to watch the freaking World Series.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I'm right there with Barry. What? I wasn't watching hockey. That sport sucks. But I wasn't watching the World Series.
You were
either.
Watching the Bulls.
I was watching the Bulls. Only the Bulls.
You were the guy. You were
only
the guy watching the Bulls during the World Series.
It was me and 22,000 others at the United Center.
What do you think the old sports writer's doing? Do you think he watched the game yesterday?
That's an excellent question. I don't know.
He's definitely golfing because the weather is really nice.
Yeah, he's golfing every day until the polar vortex comes, I think. Speaking of old sports people, the news just became public. Bob Costas retiring from play-by-play.
I think that's the right choice.
I think it is as well.
And I know that you know Bob a lot better than I do. And I do know that he would prefer that I talk more in interviews.
Yes, it's true.
It's important.
Yes.
But I think that the way that I enjoyed our conversation with him, and I think that the way that MLB Network uses him, there is a place for Bob Costas, even like right now, inside of game broadcast. it's not as play-by-play guy. It's his master of ceremonies.
I agree with that. The way
that's what he should be.
That the job that he had at NBC on the original Sunday Night Football, when NBC took it, which was Costas as studio host, and he would deliver kind of an essay-esque monologue, keeping that format alive, the way like the great Lindsay Nelson used to do that, you know, like all sorts of hallowed legends of broadcasts yore would do that. Costas is great at that.
Well, we need it too. I just think that it's really important to have people that can make the historical references and also really care about the baseball that's happening right now.
Yeah, Bob is really thoughtful about everything that's changed. Like, I was the one pushing at him for a salary cap in our conversation, and he's like, but Matt, it's mitigated. There are ways that it's mitigated. You can, you know, be efficient like some of these other teams and get there and succeed, you know?
And the thing is that Costas doesn't... For me, like, if you're a young baseball fan and you feel like he might be too old school for you, I understand that. But he doesn't come off as someone who doesn't like the game currently.
No, he still adores the game. I can tell you factually, yeah, for sure. He absolutely adores the game. He's up on all of it. And, you know, man, the job of play-by-play, if you don't do it, it's really hard to be sharp at it.
Yes.
You know? And I can speak from limited experience in that regard. If you do three games in July one year, and then your next game is in March of the next year, you're going to have a couple of bumps, you know?
And the thing is that the pacing of baseball, too, for play-by-play is really difficult to jump in and jump out of.
Yeah.
I actually think, from my limited experience, that jumping into the frenetic pace of a basketball game is easier for the muscles to fire.
Interesting.
Versus you go into a baseball game where you're kind of creating a tapestry and there's all this story that you have to interject inside of a broadcast, that it's helpful if you're there every day, that you were there last night for the game that was played. In basketball, you can just kind of parachute in to call a game and make a game feel big.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that a guy like Costas could live alongside a former player who does play-by-play and leans into that part of their DNA?
And Costas, like Brian Anderson?
Correct. Brian Anderson is a former catcher and never really talks about it because he's always with a former player. But what if he accessed that part of his personality and his ideas as the play-by-play guy and Costas is his color man? What does that sound like?
I think that probably sounds good, although I'd probably rather have that on radio than on television. I just think that Bob Costas presiding over something still feels big to me. Now, granted, you and I are Gen Xers. Like, we grew up with Costas being that voice for us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that feels right. That feels the way to really use all of those skills that he's got as a communicator is to preside over baseball.
How about just presiding over baseball as the commissioner?
I would not, Shane.
Oh, man.
I'm with you 100%.
Watching
the commissioner give out the trophy last night was clunky as AF.
How about just president of the country? I'd take that.
We're going to decide on that
in
a few days.
Bob's right in Costas.
Tell you what, Bob's got thoughts on all that.
Yes, he does.
I remember one time I was having a phone conversation with him, and I heard whatever news channel he was watching very loud, and he would occasionally go, "Hold on, Matt. Hold on, Matt." And he would, "Oh, mother," he was like cursing at the news coverage. That at 100% happened.
Yeah, Bob's got thoughts, and I'm okay with hearing those thoughts, all right, for sure.
Real quick question. Anybody want Anthony Rizzo back for the Cubs? Because the Yankees...
No.
$25 million option.
No,
Aaron Judge loves him, so they might pick it up, but you know, he can move Michael Bush over to second base or something like that.
No.
Okay.
No, I'd feel bad for those clubbies if he were back there in the clubhouse.
The Cubs have a second baseman, and as a matter of fact, we're getting ready to talk with him.
Good point.
Nico Horner is going to be on the show. We'll ask him how his offseason's going and ask him about Will Venable, the new manager of the White Sox. So don't go anywhere. We're going to get you some intel next. Spiegel and Holmes on the score.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod. That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Four. Leaning on the second baseman, number two, Nico Hoerner.
Nico Hoerner, that's so funny.
We drove to the park together. We were listening to Nico. Oh, man, it's funny.
Nico Hoerner, how are you, man? Keep rocking it, mate.
He's got good hair.
He does.
He's jacked, too.
Yeah, he is.
I'm jealous.
Starting second baseman for your Chicago Cubs.
After 9 years as a player, he joined the Cubs front office before becoming a first base coach, then the third base coach.
Give us a takeaway that you had from each stop, Texas, Boston, and with the Cubs.
In Chicago, really interesting group of young, talented players, and Joe Maddon, who was creative and innovative and an unbelievable leader. And the thing that really sticks out for me there is just his ability to stay positive. It didn't matter what the score of the game was. What time of the day. He just had the same presence about him, and that's something I always admired from him.
Nico Hoerner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
How fun is that?
It's a lot of fun, and there's a lot to discuss. We are so thankful that Nico Hoerner had some time for us here in the offseason to jump on and discuss a lot of things. He now joins us here on the Spiegel and Holmes show. What's up, Nico?
Hey, how are we doing?
Nico, we're good, man. Say hello to Lawrence. You know Lawrence, and he's there's no Danny. Danny's, we upgraded our Danny to a Lawrence.
That's right. It's the offseason, making moves.
Got to make moves, man, no matter what. So are you a player that watches the World Series or ignores it?
Yeah, I definitely watch a lot of the postseason. I feel like every year it gets – I mean, obviously, most of all want to be in it. That should go without saying. But it gets cooler in watching – people you played with or, friends from growing up that get to do it on the highest level. And so didn't find myself like rooting for any team in particular, but it was cool to, just watch friends or former teammates go through it.
Yeah, you got Tommy Edman, I think, with the most hits of anybody in the postseason,
Did he really? Yeah, that sounds about right. Seemed like every time up he was doing something, and in big moments too, like just impacting games in every way.
Yeah, homer in from the right side against Rodon, and then, and then there's Rizzo last night. As you're watching that thing, did you feel the runs coming when they gave the Dodgers three extra outs and then more runs came after that? You feel him coming?
Yeah, I felt for every player involved in that. It's like I find that to be the hardest thing and hardest feeling to deal with in baseball is making an error that leads to runs more than striking out with the bases loaded or all those things are going to happen. But when you make an error that leads to runs, that just like it's the most sinking feeling. And those are all great defenders involved in every one of those plays too. It's such a tough sport.
When you get to the final out, as someone that plays inside of this league, does your mind immediately turn to the next season, or have you already turned that page?
Yeah, I think for me, this past year, I feel already so separated from it that it's honestly a little hard to wrap my mind around that these players are still within that same season, because mine has so much gone on to the next now, because it's just whatever the next task is, like you just take on. And I was definitely thinking about how the Dodgers, how short their offseason is, going from the World Series to Tokyo earlier than everybody else. And it's just crazy.
Yeah, that's funny. Lawrence, it's like when you and I finish a radio show and then we go do something for 4 hours, then the guys who are after us are still on doing the next radio show. And Nico, like, we'll do laundry, go have a meal, whatever. Like, those guys are still working? That's insane.
Still working,
Exactly. So when you watch those two teams last night or in this World Series, what's the difference between them and the Cubs, you think?
I thought it was interesting that this year it did seem like the two teams with the most talent or close to it were in the World Series, because in past years it hasn't always been true, I feel like. The biggest difference, both those teams were able to piece together a crazy amount of innings with their bullpens in the playoffs, and that was, I felt like, really stood out about those teams this year. And then, the ability to change games with power. I feel like there was so many games that were swung on, three-run homers or even grand slams, as we saw this series. And you know, we didn't impact games that much with power this past season, but two teams that did everything really well all around, I thought.
How well do you know Will Venable?
Will is awesome, man. I'm so happy for him, first of all. I know that back when he was with us, he had aspirations to manage, and just so his progression seems like it's been a really nice, steady progression that sets him up for really to be prepared for this moment. Both being under Joe and then working with Bochy, like he's been around some legends. So his demeanor, I think, is perfect for it in that he's extremely laid back. You know, same heartbeat, very consistent guy, but he has that laid back demeanor while also being very detail oriented and noticing everything, observing, like always being on top of things. And I just feel like he's in a really nice spot to step in and be a great manager.
What do you remember working on with him when you guys were together?
Yeah, he was mainly with the outfielders, but just I just appreciated his perspective, just because he was a guy who had played somewhat recently, so he had that nice mix of not being detached from the game as a player, but having been on the coaching side too, where, you know, I think some coaches that end up being pretty removed from playing or never played at the highest level at all. I think that perspective just ends up coming from a place that's not as relatable sometimes. So I really enjoyed his player perspective.
This is quite the challenge for him, Nico. We were talking about it yesterday, where, like, even if he makes them 20 games better, they're still a 100 loss team. So, yeah. So what is it about him that leads you to believe that he's going to be able to navigate the front office and bringing in players and then handling what's happening in the clubhouse and handling all of the criticism that goes along with right now being anyone involved with the White Sox?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it already a little bit, but just his demeanor in general is not someone that you're ever going to get a sense of panic from. And that's huge for no matter what team you're managing, but especially you know, on a team that has room for improvement, and there's going to be rocky steps in the road, just like there are for all of us. But the thing that you want most from a leadership position, I think, is just setting a tone of, you know, growth mindset and just the ability to handle challenges and turn them into positives and find ways to improve. I think he's going to set a really, really nice tone for that. And if it is a team that ends up being younger, that's looking that way, right? He's definitely a guy that'll be able to relate to players and have guys respect immediately. So I think he's a great fit for that.
Have you ever had a guy on a coaching staff who wasn't the manager who was a hard ass? Because I don't know if Venable's ever been the bad cop, and a manager sometimes has to be the bad cop from a personality perspective.
I did have a funny moment with him when he was the first base coach. When I first got called up in 2019, briefly, there was a play that got, like, I was overturned or something. I was mad about something, and I kind of, like, tossed my gloves, like, in his direction. And, like,
that checks out. That checks out, yeah. Nico.
He flipped his switch, like, really quick. And it was just like, don't you throw your stuff at me. Like, I'm not here for that. Like, that is not my role. Like, I'll carry your stuff, but don't throw it at me. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, for sure. My bad, dude. And didn't do that again. But talked to him about that last time I saw him. It was funny. But he set me straight right there. So he definitely can do it.
That's good. That's good. Like, yeah. Seriously, like, sometimes, right, guys go from coach to manager, and you don't know if they've got that club in the bag. Like, need it.
Yeah, I mean, he's laid back, but he's all about his business, and you know, it's not by chance that he's earned this role at, you know, such a young age, and just so excited for him. It'll be great. And I know he appreciates Chicago too. Just like being in the city, I think meant a lot to him and his family too. So that's pretty cool.
And you're okay, right? Because, you know, Cubs fans are worried about you. Just want to make sure that you're all right.
In what way? Mentally, physically, emotionally, what do we got?
Well, I mean, all if you'd like to share, but physically after surgery, you're good.
Right flexor tendon. We didn't know anything about that. It was a surprise.
Yeah, funny I didn't mention that.
Why didn't you bring it up, man?
We would have sent you flowers, Nico. We totally would have.
I'm doing well. If we had a game soon, not so much. But fortunately, we don't. And, you know, road to recovery is going well. First surgery I've ever had, so kind of new thing in that way, so I don't have anything to really compare it to. But yeah, I'm feeling good.
Well,
feeling good, feeling positive. It's gonna be all right.
You hit 355 in September, dude. You were the fifth best batting average in all of baseball in September. So
just don't look at my throws.
I was gonna say. So what did this bother? This bothered the throws and not the swing.
It was a little bit of everything, but no, it didn't. There weren't too many moments that it impacted the year too much. But I'm glad I didn't miss any games. Obviously, in hindsight, I wish I. I feel good about where I'm at, and I think I'm going to learn a lot in the rehab process too. Just talking to teammates who've gone through, mainly pitchers, obviously, who've gone through similar surgeries. Just kind of all of them say, just like in the rehab of a surgery, you got more time on your hands, and it's really an opportunity to kind of slow down and reassess things, and a bit of a fresh start in some ways. So, I'm feeling good.
There are no worries about February. Like, you'll be full go at training camp.
No, I don't know. We're working on it. I think projecting that far out ahead is a bit challenging. It's an injury that, like, most of the timelines I feel like are based on pitchers. So, I think there's going to be some feel through that process, but I'm feeling good with how I'm moving so far.
Wow. Well, good. Yeah. Cause like, it was a tough year for you offensively, just from like the way that you talked about it. You could tell, you shared that it was, you wanted more out of yourself. So it's gotta be
for sure.
Right. So that's gotta be a weird thing to have possible injury. Like it did something that maybe you didn't even want to talk about, obviously to us, but to anybody for a while, as you sorted it out.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many guys that deal with things that are never public at all. And, in some ways it was my most healthy year in some ways. Like, my lower body felt amazing. Like, I had my legs under me all year and really learned a lot. And then there's new challenges that popped up too. And so there's always going to be something. Unfortunately, this one led to, surgery, which isn't something I've dealt with before, but, I'm feeling really good about the process and I'm in good hands. So I definitely feel like I'm going to come out of it a better version of myself too.
Well, good. We're glad to hear that, man. And we hope that the rehab goes really well. When spring training comes around, you're able to be your hardscrabble glove throwing at coach's self.
Oh, hardscrabble is delightful. Hardscrabble is outstanding. The other thing, Lawrence, don't guys usually come out of surgeries like this? They gain a mile an hour or two on the fastball.
That's right.
Usually.
I'm going to be able to throw it all the way from second to first.
Which is all you need to do.
It's all you need, man. That's
Nico, right. Thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it. Get better.
All right. Thank you, guys. Hope you're doing well.
All right, Nico. Nice to talk to you, man. Enjoy your off season.
Okay. that's Nico Horner.
Glad you asked about February, man. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Something to keep an eye on now. And hopefully he will be fine. But I think he probably is going to be fine.
God, it's so hard to hit in the big leagues, It's just such a ridiculously difficult thing.
Yeah, and he was doing it basically with one hand.
Yeah,
so
essentially.
That's pretty impressive, especially with those September numbers.
Right, but it's like, I mean, we would talk like about, hey, fly balls to the right side that don't have enough power to get out. I wonder if you should be trying to get under those and hit more line drives. He's like, yeah, the line drive always plays. Like, who the hell knows how an injury like that affects your swing plane, how it affects your strength, your balance, all of it.
I kind of wish he wouldn't have stopped his thought about it in hindsight, because it feels like maybe he thinks he could have headed this off maybe a little earlier, but we'll see. Hopefully it's not an issue and he's good to go when we see March. Like, he's actually out there playing games in March. Doesn't the season start again in March?
Season starts again in March with the Cubs and the Dodgers in Tokyo. Oh,
that's right. They're in Japan.
Yeah, man, they are. A top of the hour, Mark Grody with an action-packed, soundbite-packed Bears hit. Two words where you'll hear from coaches and on the offensive side and the defensive side. Looking forward to that.
I listened to I looked at the Will Venable press conference today.
Okay.
There were a couple things that I thought were worth putting out there for us to discuss, if you're up for it.
I sure am.
Let's do that next. Spiegel and Holmes on the Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Spiegs, I was trying to figure out, as the White Sox make their announcement of Will Venable as their new manager, like, how much of it actually matters. And I know that we had a big discussion about it yesterday. I thought Shane made some really good points about it as well on – does it really matter if you don't change your overall philosophy? And we know that the White Sox are working towards that from a front office standpoint as far as the additions that have been made. But if that's not backed up with money, I'm not sure that any of it's going to matter.
Well, it depends how smart you're going to be and what your time horizon. I pushed back a little yesterday, and I've got more on that, and we can do it as the offseason progresses, and we'll see what they do. But if I think they're going to try and go to like a Tampa Bay or Milwaukee model of doing everything the right way, and Will Venable gets to be a partner in the development of that.
That takes a long time.
It does, but he's looking forward to it, and he's in. So he wants to be a part of all of that.
He is, and it was interesting because I was in on the Zoom this morning, and I was listening. There was a lot of really good questions about this, and a lot of them can't be answered right now because we just don't know how the White Sox are going to function as an organization. But there were two things that I thought that you would find interesting. This was our guy Guff asking the question about to Chris Getz about them getting an idea of what the league thinks about them because of all the interviews. The White Sox said they initially had 60 candidates for this to start the process. So Guff kind of asked them what they learned. Here's what Chris Getz said.
You know, you go through a kind of a grand or large process like we did. It's an opportunity to learn more about yourself, right? I mean, you're having conversations about to other individuals that work in other organizations. And along the way, there are, you know, there's opportunities to ask them, you know, what their perception is of the organization. And, you know, sometimes I felt like it was accurate. Sometimes, you know, it was not. And through that, you know, through those conversations, you know, I think for one, I'm really proud of our baseball operations group because, you know, we're talking about essentially a 2-month process, and they committed a lot of time and effort in putting together, you know, an interview process that also had the ability to be a reflection of what we represent as an organization. That was really important to me. Obviously, that's not the priority. The priority is to find the best candidate to fit in with the White Sox organization as a manager. You know, we're still taking shape as a leadership group. You know, this was generally our first year all working together, a lot of new faces, new ideas, but it really forced us and allowed us to really spend some intentional time together to develop. Well, you know, what is important to us? What are our values? How do we view the manager position? How do all these processes, you know, work towards our ultimate goal of being a competitive major league club? So if anything, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we learned something new, so to speak. But I think all the time we spent together allowed us to shape our leadership structure to allow us to go out there and execute even more efficiently in years to come.
So what do you hear when you hear that, Speaks?
I hear somebody who took the opportunity of talking to so many people outside the organization to genuinely look inward and see how they're doing stuff. I heard something that nobody in that position has really done. You know, Rick Hahn interviewed a bunch of different managers, but he just wanted to bring them into what he was doing. I hear an extension of what Chris Getz did with the Navy SEAL, the former Navy SEAL, Mahler, and building the committee and actually trying to look at the entire organization and see what they're doing. I see a well-intentioned turn of a very big bus. I don't know that it's going to work, but I like the intentions of the turn so far.
Yeah, I hope that everything that you and I are hearing about the improvement of the baseball operation is true and doesn't get subverted by ownership.
Yeah, the texter says, this doesn't sound dumb. I don't know how to feel about that.
That's a good point. It's a fair point, too. The Dutchman, I believe, asked the question about expectations and trying to figure out what is success to Venable.
Rembrandt? Was it Rembrandt who was
there? No, it wasn't.
Hans Christian Andersen, or he was a Dane, I think.
Yes, it was him. But this is what Venable had to say about trying to judge the next season of White Sox baseball.
You know, you have a
plan, and certainly that is to create an environment where guys can be at their best. And it's going to come with challenges, and there's going to be situations that challenge that and are going to force us to rethink things and be adjustable and flexible to things. And I think if you look up at the end of the year and you say that you've handled that adversity well, that's definitely a sign of a successful year. We also know that we're building something. You know, we know that there's not just the way that we go about our business and our culture, but also, you know, our systems and our processes. If we've continued to build that for the future, I think that that's also a sign of a successful year.
One of the other things that Venable was asked about, like, how did Greenberg, I believe, asked this question. How did Getz convince you? Like,
yeah,
take
good
the job?
Good question.
And his answer was, is that he said that he didn't need convincing, that he thought that Chris was very transparent about where the Sox are, and that honesty kind of gave him belief in what they're going to do next. So I do like that.
Yeah.
I do like that Chris Getz isn't out here, you know, selling wolf tickets. You know, that he is actually like, look, man, this is a big job. We've got a lot of problems, but here's how we're working to try and make these things better, and we think that you fit into that perfectly.
Yeah. No, I think it's all sensible. And from what I've heard, Bruce Bochy has no plans on really going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, that was one of the other things that I thought, and maybe later on in the offseason we can get into it. I thought it was interesting where he talked about himself as the amalgam of all of the people that he's worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about like how Joe kept everything light and the way that Bruce Bochy went about it. So you're right. Like when you were talking about his resume,
it's crazy.
All the places that he can draw from is amazing, and figuring out like what percentage of the guys that he's been around in the game are going to add up to who he is as a manager,
mm-hmm,
is interesting.
I if we could poll the room real quick, for my famous Dutch person reference, because it's Daryl Van Skouwen, but I went with Rembrandt. I could have gone with Van Gogh. Does everybody know that he's Dutch? Or Vermeer or Mondrian, other Dutch artists? Any suggestions on who I could have gone with? From Dutch people.
The Dutch boy painting.
Totally.
I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, man. Do your thing on that one. Yeah.
Okay.
Give you full creative control.
All right, thank you.
I'm here. I don't really care about the Dutch.
All right, Eddie Van Halen.
How about Anne Frank?
Anne Frank would have been a lovely gesture, Lawrence. I was afraid to bring the room down.
Can you believe that people go and look at her house or the house that she hid in as like a tourist attraction?
Yeah, I've been there. It's incredibly moving. It's quite beautiful.
They should fix the foundation. I don't know why it's moving so much.
No, it's incredibly moving. You realize where they lived. Huh. And the fact that when she was 12, she wrote, "I still believe, despite it all, that people are good at heart."
Yeah, I think she had a ghostwriter.
We could have gone with Famke Janssen, too.
I could have. That might have been a nice touch.
Yeah.
I feel good about Rembrandt.
You should feel good about it. And
thanks, everybody.
Work.
Thanks, everybody.
When we come back, Mark Grody has got a Bears hit, two words. What happened at Halas Hall today? Groats is going to fill us in next. Spiegel and Holmes here with you on The Score.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.